And welcome back, Nashville. This is The Morning Drive. I'm John Roberts, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking you through the morning on, again, another wild day with all kinds of information coming out left and right. Want to congratulate Nashville SC once again on their franchise first victory. A lot to be said about that, but right now there is a lot to be said about what is going on in NCAA football, but perhaps lost between all the news is what may go on in basketball. For that, we bring in CBS Sports insider Gary Parrish. And Gary, when you have a situation where you're blindsided, like last year, the NBA drops out, they opt out of their season partway through, and then everybody else follows suit. You have to react as you're reacting. At this point right now, NCAA basketball is seeing a big red truck coming down the road, and the truck's coming down pretty slowly. Do you feel like they have time now on their side to make a good decision about how to proceed?
Yes, and I do think they will have a plan in place to conduct some sort of regular season in an attempt to conduct and complete a 2021 NCAA tournament. They know that they have to have a 2021 NCAA tournament. It's not going to look the way it normally looks. It might not be formatted the way it's normally formatted, but that tournament spread over 3 weeks is worth more than $900 million per year in ad revenue. They lost that money last year because this hit us pretty quickly and abruptly. They've got plenty of time to plan to be able to have that in 2021. And just trust me when I tell you, if Dan Gavitt, who is sort of the de facto college basketball commissioner, his actual title is NCAA Senior Vice President, but he is the guy that brings all of the power brokers in college basketball to the table, and he has been fairly consistent, entirely consistent, one way or another. If there is basketball being played anywhere on this planet, we will play a 2021 NCAA tournament. Simply put, they can't afford not to. Again, it's nearly $1 billion. They'll get a tournament in, even if they have to build a bubble that costs $300 million.
Yeah, Garen, you actually have your plan up at CBSSports.com on how to conduct this. It involves a little bit of moving some things around, some conference bubbles. For one thing, I guess, how fun is it to try to think about these things and put together a plan? And how much of a strain would it be for them to do this? Obviously, some of this is, it's easier for a professional league with professional athletes to bubble up paid professionals. But still, I mean, college basketball players travel all the time. They're playing night games on a Tuesday at 9 o'clock after flying somewhere and flying home. I mean, there's a lot of things that already are different than the normal student experience, right?
There's no question. I mean, listen, obviously this is difficult and unprecedented. But you better start thinking of difficult and unprecedented plans, or else you'll be sitting exactly where college football is sitting right now, trying to do something outside of a bubble that too many medical officials don't think is possible or appropriate. So the plan that I proposed is one of a thousand. It, as I point out in the column, you don't have to take what I posted and replicate it detail to detail. It's just one format. You can use a million formats. But the idea that you, quote, can't bubble up college basketball players simply isn't true. It's why it was frustrating when the Pac-12 commissioner, Larry Scott, actually said that a couple of days ago. Well, you can't have college sports in a bubble. Really? Why? Why can't you? There's not a law against it. There's not a rule against it. And as you point out, lots of college athletes do remote learning. If you are going to do remote learning, and by the way, lots of students right now do remote learning. The big secret is that college athletes have been doing remote learning for years, but like now everybody's doing remote learning. Like my first grader starts school on Monday. He will start it from an extra bedroom in our home that we have turned into a classroom. So if my first grader can learn remotely, what is so inappropriate under these circumstances about a basketball player learning remotely? What is so wild about a basketball player being 200 or even 2,000 miles from campus when every other student's going to be some distance from campus as well on lots of campuses across this country? So I just reject the idea that you can't do it. We can brainstorm about the proper ways to do it, but can you do it? Absolutely you can, and I'll take it a step further. They will. It might not be the plan I propose. It might not happen on the schedule that I propose. But I feel comfortable telling you that college basketball will be played in the 2020-21 season, and that it will be played at least in part in something that looks a lot like a bubble.
Yeah, you know, I've felt confident for a while too, Gary, about the tournament. I think it's a little stickier when you talk about the regular season. And of course, if you don't have any regular season, then how are you picking the teams for your tournament? You know, I guess you take Kansas and, you know, Kentucky, right, and whoever. I mean, you've got to have information, right?
I agree. I think what you're going to see is college basketball do something similar to what Major League Baseball has done, which is just give us enough of a regular season to say, hey, we played some games, so that you can have the postseason. What did MLB do? They shortened the regular season drastically and then expanded the playoffs. Why? Because that's where the money's at. And it's the same thing for college basketball. The regular season is necessary, but it's not the real revenue generator. The revenue generator is that $900 million NCAA tournament. So my proposal was have conference-only bubbles. And if you want to start those after Thanksgiving, that's fine with me. My proposal was in January, but like, because the Pac-12 has already said they're not playing anything until January. But as I point out in the column, I'm flexible on the specifics. This is just the framework of an idea. But my proposal is conference-only bubbles. That way, everybody is under the same umbrella. You know, the league office does have the power to tell people when they have to test, what they have to do when they test. Everybody is working, under the same umbrella. And there's 32 college basketball leagues, and that's tremendous, but if we're being honest, we don't need them all. So if a league decides we don't have the money to do that, like if the Summit League decides, well, we don't have the money to build a bubble to conduct a 20-game conference schedule, you know what you say to them? You say, oh, okay, well, we understand, and we'll see you next season. And if the Ivy League decides, well, we think it's wildly inappropriate to build a bubble just to have basketball games, we say, you know what? We understand. We'll see you next season. And if a player on a team decides my team is participating because my conference is participating, but I'm not a professional athlete, I don't need to be bubbled up for 6 weeks or 8 weeks just to play basketball, you know what we say? We say, okay, we understand. We'll see you next season. But the people who want to do this and have the money to do it should do it and will do it. And as long as you get enough of them, and me talking to different conference commissioners and athletic directors and basketball coaches across the country, I feel confident that enough leagues, the big ones, and enough players, almost all, given the option of not having a season or having a season under these circumstances, would do it. And then you have whatever kind of regular season you can have. It won't be 34 games, but maybe it's 18 or 20. Enough to produce results that make it somewhat legitimate to create a bracket. And then you create that bracket and you play it through in bubbles. And again, at the end of the day, this is the only thing that matters. You crown a champion and you cash a check, if you're the NCAA, worth nearly $1 billion.
Very true. We're talking to CBS Sports Insider Gary Parrish. Gary, I don't want to take anything away from any other sporting event because, of course, the Masters is special. The Super Bowl is special. But I just believe there's a specialness to March Madness because of the way these student-athletes pour their hearts out on the court and the surprises that we get, but also the way it takes over our society. I just think this is an event that has to be played, like you say, has to and will be played just because of the way it's in the fabric of our society.
Listen, my livelihood is tied to this stuff, so I believe that it should be played, and I actually do think it will be played. I don't know that it has to be played because what else are we going to do in March? I mean, like, what did we do last April, May, June? What are we doing right now? Like, you know, we'll get through it without watching basketball on television if we must, but I don't think we have to. Like, we already know that team sports in a bubble in the United States work. The NBA, the WNBA, MLS, NHL, the National Women's Soccer League, the basketball tournament. We have a blueprint. Like, it's not perfect, but it works. And so once you, what we don't know is that if football works outside of a bubble or even inside of a bubble. But what we do know is that you can play basketball inside of a bubble in the United States, even while COVID-19 numbers are not great in too many states in this country. So just replicate it. I know these are student athletes. I know that it's difficult. I know that it's unprecedented. I know that it's unusual, but it's not impossible. And that's the most important thing to focus on. It's not impossible. Don't let anybody tell you that. And honestly, if I had a conference commissioner like Pac-12's Larry Scott, who was saying, quote, you can't do this, I would be looking for a different conference commissioner, because this is not the time for honestly any of us in this country, but especially people who run, you know, multi-million dollar entities like power conferences. This is not the time to be using the word can't. You need to be brainstorming about ways to make something that is possible happen. And that's what I know the people connected to college basketball outside of Larry Scott are doing right now.
Yeah, who knew Larry Scott would say or do something dumb? You know, it's just it's out of character.
I've known Larry for a long time, and he is actually a really smart person, which is why it's surprising to me he consistently does dumb things. I don't know. There was no need to say what he said the other day. Like, you can always punt on these questions. Like, can college basketball be played in a bubble? You know, you just say, well, you know, we're exploring all options, and you know, we'll leave no stone unturned if you want to dive into the cliche. Like, there's a way to not say what he said, and yet he said what he said, and obviously what he said is just not true. Evidence being that I can tell you matter-of-factly, multiple conferences are actually exploring the idea of college basketball bubbles to complete their conference season. Like, the fact that other conferences are exploring it by definition means it's not impossible.
Yeah, and with that can-do attitude you were talking about, Gary, that's it's a time to figure out how to get it done, and get it done for not just the athletes, but for everybody as well. So, Gary, thank you so much for your time and your insight. We really appreciate it. Stay safe and hope to talk to you soon.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me. Take care of yourself.
All right.
Thanks, Gary.
So Gary Parrish with, the can-do attitude.
Kind of had me ready to run through a wall. Gary Parrish got me pumped up today.
I'm
feeling
about
good about hoops.
Man. Yeah. I want all sports, you know. The more live sports, the better. Yes, we agree with that. But, man, that NCAA tournament is just something that's absolutely, it's just a special thing. And all sporting events are special. But that one, I just believe, is just a little bit above some.
I've called it the greatest sporting event we have, and you go back and forth, you watch a game 7 of a Stanley Cup final or a game 7 NBA, you watch Super, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of great ones, but there's nothing like some of the things that tournament has, including the schools. You mentioned Davidson earlier, just the Cinderella stories. There's nothing else that can provide those like the NCAA tournament.
Okay, perhaps a very unusual segment coming up. We're going to talk about something that will probably have absolutely nothing to do with COVID. We may go a whole segment without saying bubble, COVID, delay, or anything of the like. Postponement?
Wow.
Ready?
Radical.
Are you ready for it? All right. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5, and we'll be back. And welcome back, Nashville. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5, The Game. And John Roberts, Joe Rexrode, and Marquise Munson with you today. Guys, let's go to the phones, bring in our friend Nate. And Nate, what's on your mind this morning?
Hey, guys. That was a great interview about college basketball. I feel like it would be a little difficult for some people to watch the college basketball if the I'm going to call them non-Power 5, even though there's not really a Power 5 college basketball, I don't think. Like the Cinderella story, mid-major teams like MTSU, if they weren't able to play because they can't afford to do the bubble, I feel like a lot of people watch the tournament to see the Cinderella stories and all that. And I feel like college basketball would be the one sport that is majorly affected if there were no fans there, because then you could have the mid-majors, they would have a better chance at winning since you don't have that, you know, the rough atmosphere.
Yeah, Nate, I got to agree with you 100%. I think that is one of the most attractive things about the tournament is that Cinderella story, is this smaller school. And again, we talked earlier, Nate, today, would Steph Curry be Steph Curry if they had missed that tournament his junior year and didn't make that run into the Elite Eight?
No, great points by Nate there. One, like I've heard people over the years like, you know what, Power Five – you know, there's the overall storyline of Power Five separate from everyone else, and then you just have a tournament with the best Power Five teams. And I'm like, this does not sound attractive to me at all. I don't want this. And this is where football and basketball are so different, because football, we want to see the big teams play because you know what's going to happen. But on a given night in the sport of basketball, you don't know what's going to happen. And how many incredible moments have we seen with these lower-seeded teams from smaller leagues, and to Nate's point, those buildings. I mean, I've been in them so many times. Those buildings just turn on the favorite, and they are all in on the underdog. I mean, my last game I covered at Michigan State was against Middle Tennessee in St. Louis, and it was just like that. You got that feeling, and it builds and builds, and the pressure is so intense on the favorite, and it's not nearly that intense if you don't have – the fans on top of you, all the fans of all the other schools that are at that site are now rooting for the underdog. So I agree, it would be adversely affected if there can't be a fan presence. That said, give me the choice of door A, you know, basketball, no fans, or no basketball, it's an easy choice.
Yeah, exactly. And when you have a sporting event that, I mean, so much is so predictable just because it is, okay? You look at one football team as compared to the other one on paper, you can say, okay, these guys are bigger, they're faster, they have more skill at skill positions. But then you go into the NCAA tournament and, you know, you can ask a fan of Virginia basketball, yes, a number 16 seed can beat a number 1 seed in this tournament. 2 can beat 15. And, boy, I remember one year we were in Milwaukee. And a little team by the name of Weber State and a point guard by the name of Harold Arsenault lit up the UNC Tar Heels for a huge upset victory there. So those are the things. And again, back to the caller Nate's point, is the fact that this is really one of the auras about that. Then you get down to it, you know, and you get your power teams, you get your Kansas, Kentuckys, et cetera, that are going to be in that Final Four, and which is a very, very special event in and of itself. But that just culminates that incredible month.
Well, and then you still have a George Mason, 2006, my sister's alma mater. All of a sudden, she was a huge George Mason basketball. She knew everything about George Mason basketball in the span of like 2 weeks. She like knew who was coming off the bench. I'm like, wait, why didn't you go to games when you were in college? You know, but
because they weren't that good then.
Yeah, you know,
right?
But we have had some of those teams that have actually gotten all the way through to there in recent years, and there's other examples of that. But yeah, usually it sort of shakes itself out, and that stuff happens early. But I mean, isn't that really? I mean, that is the one, I guess, knock on the NCAA tournament is that you could argue that the second weekend is the best because it's just unbelievable games.
Yeah.
But really, the first weekend is the best weekend of the 3 weeks, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it's so many games, and then that's when you have the upsets. Probably, to me, the round of 32, you still have some of the Cinderellas. Some of them make the Sweet 16. You have a bunch of big-time matchups as well. I mean, the whole thing is, again, it's not – I mean, actually, Gary Parrish, we had two college basketball writers on this show, which excites me in the first place. But Gary Parrish sounds more than 75%.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Dana said, Dana O'Neill.
Yeah, he said they will.
Yeah, said 75% earlier. And I mean, I think you got to leave a little bit of cushion because we don't know what's happening
still,
in the
world,
yeah. Right?
And we don't know what's happening Saturday, much less in March of next year.
But yeah, Parrish said will.
I like the optimism.
I'm holding him to will, yeah.
Yeah, you like the optimism that that's going to happen, but again, we could be in for this onslaught of sports. If there is spring college football, then you throw in a little bit of March Madness, then you throw in college baseball, then you throw in the pro leagues that are still around at that point of time, throw you in a little Daytona 500. Man, you've got an oleo of sports that would just be coming at you one after another, and you'd probably wear out your couch.
Yeah, because you're probably not going to be at much of these. But hey, here's another point to make on the whole idea of spring sports is that even if like a vaccine, and by the way, I think you said we weren't going to talk about COVID, and of course I've veered us into COVID, so I apologize, John.
Yeah, that's all right.
Let me just apologize. But
I was on inevitable. I was wishful thinking anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so that's my bad. But let's say, look, no, the vaccine idea by like January, February, I think that's far-fetched when you think about trials and actual distribution. But treatments and testing and things like that, and human behavior improving. I mean, all these things are possible to the point where, like, if I'm an SEC fan, look, I understand, like, you want to play football this fall. But what if you were told, and I wrote a column today about Tennessee football possibly benefiting from spring football. What if you were told you can have like 50% capacity or more in your stadiums because this happens? I know you can't be told that right now. We don't know that, but yep. It's possible. 5 months from now could be so different. 5 months ago was so different. We can't, again, like Dabo Swinney says, it's not going to look any different in the spring. It's just like Larry Scott saying you can't bubble up a team.
Yeah.
How could you say that? How could you pretend to know that it won't be any different? You don't know. And you said that we were going to have football with full stadiums with 100% certainty in April because you didn't know then. Let's all admit we don't know. But I do think that it's possible that we have a better fan situation in the spring if some of the things I said come to pass. So it'd be nice to have even a third full arenas for NCAA basketball games that you could still have some of that crowd sentiment for the underdog versus now when we have like virtual fans or cardboard cutouts.
So we promised earlier to explain what happens when you hit the shift bar and the number 8 on your computer. You get the asterisk.
Oh, I know. I kill that word.
No. Asterisk.
I say asterisk, but it is asterisk.
Risk.
Asterisk.
Okay. Now that we got
that's a tough one.
But I honestly believe, okay, there's going to be that little star. We'll call it the little star. By so many things that historians write about in sports that are going to transpire this season that have already happened so far. And when it comes in terms of crowning a champion, you know, there's going to be a star by it. It's going to be in the COVID season now that we've broken the rule. It's going to be in that season. And Dabo Swinney also said, I don't think it tarnishes a championship, which again, maybe I buy what he's saying a little bit, because year after year, if the SEC, he's basically dissing the Big Ten a little bit, but if the SEC and the ACC is producing your champion every year in college football, they're both playing, yeah, maybe it's not that different, but it's still going to have that star by it. But I go back to, Joe, this is what I believe in competition. When you lay it out, and that's the great thing about competition, when you lay out an athletic event, everybody knows the rules going in, right? When you line up across the field, doesn't matter how much that guy across me, doesn't matter how much money his daddy makes, doesn't matter the color of his skin, doesn't matter where he grew up. It's you against him, or you or her against her, taking on each other in the you know, the wonderful field that is athletic competition. So now everybody knows the rules, right? You're in the bubble. You had an opportunity to opt out, and you're playing now, okay? So when you crown the NBA champion, you won that year. Did you beat everybody else that was out there? It's like when people say a NASCAR race, a guy wins on fuel mileage or wins rain shortened, and say, well, you know, I would like to have beaten everybody. No, you beat everybody that was out there, right? So you won. You got the check. You got the trophy. And when we get these truncated split-up seasons or compete in a bubble or whatever, everybody went in under the same rules. Everybody comes out. So therefore, I don't know that we do wear out the shift 8 on this thing, because you still are a champion. You beat everybody else that was out there.
Yeah. I mean, look, if someone goes from the qualifying round to win the Stanley Cup, then the asterisk is this was tougher than any other champion. You know, I hate the idea that, I mean, look, the conditions have changed, but they've changed for everyone. So to me, that wipes away shift 8. Fan presence is a part of this. Obviously, you work hard in the NBA to get that home game for game 7. Now it's not a factor anymore. But again, you're playing at the highest level. Let me do the coach. Norm Hoosiers. What the heck, Norman?
Oh,
Norman. Whatever his name was, Gene Wilder.
Yeah,
you know. Look, guys.
Yeah, Gene Hackman.
It's Gene Hackman. Yeah, I say Gene
Wilder.
Wilder.
It would have been wild.
Let me tell you how I'm botching this entire thing. The point is, these baskets.
But you got asterisks, right?
Yeah. Thank you. The baskets are 10 feet, guys. You know, they were in the big place for the state championship. It's the same thing. You got the same conditions, and no, none of that. I do think with Dabo, see, Dabo can say that because they came back and beat Ohio State in a game they shouldn't have won last year. I still think like Ohio State would be a team that might have something to say this year with Justin Fields about a national championship. But hey, if this is how it goes and they play, and the Big Ten either doesn't or plays its own little season in the spring, then it's a national champion.
Yep, and you know, the Predators didn't fare the way they wanted to, but if they would have, it would have been, you know, if they made it through, the star would have been on something unusual, but still, it would have been a championship. So we got to take us a quick break here, but when we come back, talk to Hal Gill from the Preds Radio Analyst. He'll be with us here in just one moment. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5. And welcome back, Nashville. This is The Morning Drive on 102.5. The Game, John Roberts, Joe Rexroad, and Marquise Munson with you. Want to bring in our good friend Hal Gill, who is the Predators Radio Analyst, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. And Is it oversimplifying, Hal, when you say when you put this phrase on the Preds, high payroll, high expectations? Is that too simplified?
Well, it's kind of a tough way to put it. You know, you have players that are earning money because they've done big things and they've earned that money. You know, by their past and what they've done, you expect them to perform at that level continually at that price. But it's really hard to put a price on what a team is when they're all together. And I think that's the part that, you know, people say, hey, you got to perform. You get paid that much. Well, you're on a team. And so the team really, and it took me a long time to figure that out. You want to be on a good team. Everyone wants to win, but you have to be able to find out what it takes to win, and that's where the problems come in. It's not just scoring goals. It's not just blocking shots. It's not the stats. It's whatever it takes to win, and that's where you get paid, and that's where you earn the money, and that's what the Preds are still looking to do.
Yeah, no doubt about that, Hal. If we take it to the individual level, though, and a guy we've talked a lot about all year, Ryan Johansson, I thought he was a freaking monster in Edmonton. And it's not realistic, as you can speak on as well as anyone, it's not realistic to expect, you know, playoff performance, intensity, whatever you want to call it, and apply that to every night of an 82-game season. But what is your takeaway from how he performed there and what that says about him moving forward?
Yeah, you know what you are looking for from a highly paid, highly skilled, competitive guy like Ryan Johansson is you're looking for a glimpse every game. And, you know, you want to stay in a game and you need guys to perform for 82 games, but you need that little glimpse of it, and you need it to pop up every game. And that's sometimes the hard part is getting that separation between, you know, I haven't seen him for 10 games, and then he goes on a spurt. You need a guy like him to pop up, and I thought in the playoffs he stepped up big time. And that's what you're looking for, not every game, but you're looking for that consistently throughout the season. But if he can get what he was given in the playoffs, I thought he was a monster. He had some dangles. He was setting guys up. He was moving the puck well. I think he realized how to use Philip Forsberg a little bit better. You know, they talked a lot about being a power forward and what you do as a power forward. And I thought he stepped up and used Forsberg, used Arvidsson, and played really well. So it's a good sign. You know, you have, if you can get Joey to play that, a glimpse of that during the regular season, that's going to be awesome for the Preds. I thought he stepped up his game big time. But he's done that in the past. He's been a beast in the playoffs before.
Yeah, you brought up, I was going to ask you the next thing on those guys. How much of this do you think was the reunion of that line? And I guess, what does it say to you about next year, too? Obviously, I mean, Forsberg talked yesterday, like he totally got the idea of putting him with Duchesne. Obviously, there's been this search to get another line of support, but then you see those guys together, and it's like, man, that's a tough thing to break up in the future, I would think.
Yeah, you know what? I really feel like the Preds are missing that net drive power forward, and Forsberg fits the bill. He can play that way. He's more on the skill side, but when he plays like a power forward, he's super effective, and we saw how good he could be. I think he's got a lot more in him, and I think it's just ready to burst. He's just got to tailor his game to make it work. So if you put him with Duchesne, I still think you're looking for that at that big power forward guy to play with Joey. So it's kind of a tough thing. You can only have so many Philip Forsbergs, and that's kind of a tough thing. You know, you want to hand them out. I think Turris playing with Duchesne just doesn't work because there's not that big presence. They need a 1-2 punch with a big guy, and so I think that, for me, that would be number one issue in the offseason is getting that guy. He doesn't necessarily have to be overly skilled, but you need someone to push in and pack. I think Gronlund did a good job of it. But he's still, you need a little more jam into the net, and I think that'll fill out the top six, because then you can put Forsberg with either Duchesne or with Johansson, and then you have another guy to fill in the other side. And so that gives you your top six.
How it was almost a little bit of insult to injury when it came down that the Predators fell so far down in the draft lineup, but can you still make an impact with a pick in the 11th position in the NHL draft?
Yeah, all right, absolutely. These young kids, just watch the playoffs. It seems like there's a kid I've never heard before impacting games. And, I think at 11 pick, I think you're going to get a great player. I really... After Lafreniere, I think there's, obviously he's the guy everyone's looking at, and the Rangers, as lucky as they are to get him, there's a lot of other players that are going to be an impact. And the Preds they've talked about stocking the shelves, and this is why they've done it. They're going to have some young players coming in. Tomasino is coming up. They have players that are going to be impacting the lineup soon, and I think this draft isn't going to be far away from that. So it'll be interesting to see who they go with and how they plan it. I think in the NHL, you really got to pick your best player. You don't pick by a position. So they're going to look at what they have, and they've done a great job with prospects and drafting well. So I don't see any reason why you wouldn't have one or two guys coming up impacting the lineup in the next 2 years.
Hal, we were talking earlier about some of the impact of what we're all going through right now on the future. And in sports, one thing, we've already seen some is remote broadcasting. Maybe we'll see more of that in the future. Just wondering from your perspective, what was it like calling these games from Bridgestone, not having the live action in front of you? Was it tough to handle? Was it way different? And what do you think about that as a possible trend moving forward?
Yeah, you know what? It was so interesting to me. I felt like it was kind of a lab experiment. I'm going, all right, what am I getting myself into? Hopefully we don't have to do it. That being said, as I was doing it, I'm excited for the first game. It was all new. It was all exciting. And then, you get to games 2, 3, and 4, and then you're going, okay, this is fun. But there's an element missing, and it's in between periods. You get that break. Usually you're at the rink and you bump into someone. You say hi. You're excited. The game, there's a feeling in the building that kind of grabs you and pulls you in and gets you excited about the game. I miss that. I didn't realize how much I would miss that until I'm actually going through it and it's not there. It's kind of it was interesting. It's fun, calling a game with Pete Weber is amazing anyway. He's such a pro, and I'm not sure how he did it as well as he did just watching a TV, because I thought it was difficult. He nailed it, but there's an atmosphere that you miss, and that's the fun part about calling the games, and you try to make that atmosphere for the fans and for the listeners, but It is tough. Over an 82-game season, I think that would be it would be tough to be stuck in a room and calling the games there.
Yeah.
Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. Hal, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and hope to talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. We'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Great.
Lots more to talk about.
This yes, sir.
NHL hockey, too. You guys got to pay attention to that, too.
Yeah, how would you be feeling? I mean, Seth Jones looked just fine, 65 minutes. You know, how would you be feeling after a game like that?
you know, it's funny. When I was playing, the game was a lot slower. You could grind out a game. These guys were five overtimes, and they were still humping up and down the ice. I was blown away. The level that they sustained for that long, like trying to beat out icings, you get into double overtime and you're like, forget it. That's an icing. We'll take a break and rest up.
All right, Hal, thanks.
It was impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Hal, thanks a lot. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon. So, folks, we got to grab us a quick break here. This is the Morning Drive on 102.5 The Game. Nashville SC will face FC Dallas this Sunday at 7:30 p.m. Catch all of the action on 102.5 The Game or ESPN 949, beginning with the pregame coverage at 7:15 p.m. And welcome once again back, Nashville. This is the Morning Drive on 102.5 The Game. John Roberts, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson here, wrapping up an action-packed 4 hours of sports news. And, every once in a while, especially, with what you got, I've never been the biggest fan, Joe, of social media because I think it can get pretty nasty sometimes. But I like sometimes when people will post really humorous stuff and they use it for the humorous side of things. So the other day, greatest little one-line cartoon. You got a scientist in a lab coat, right? And he's sitting by his computer. And all the other scientists in the lab are standing behind him looking over his shoulder. And he says, look, guys, I know we all have MD degrees, and I know we've been doing this for 35 years, but, man, you got to read what this guy just put on Facebook about the disease.
Oh, that is. That
couldn't
be more perfect.
It up.
Couldn't be more perfect. And it's social media. A lot of people in our realm that seem to be way smarter than I would guess they would be on science. I'm try to stay away from that stuff. I have no idea.
Yeah, and always consider the source.
Yeah.
Simply consider what you're looking at, because Joe down the street does not have the knowledge that Joe Rexro does on UT football.
Well, in theory, anyway. It sounds good. That's the thing. It's like, man, I already had some very questionable sports opinions before a pandemic. I'm not getting into the epidemiology. It's funny, though, on a serious note on that, again, like, I think one thing that a lot of people have learned here is that science normally doesn't talk about stuff until they have done all the things to know about it. And in this situation, we've been watching them with the entire world screaming at them to figure it out, try to figure it out. And I think that's something that, like, people who would say, well, this guy said this before, and now he says this, or he was wrong. This, yeah, normally we don't see science like that. They do all their work in a lab, and we couldn't care less.
Yeah.
And then, what's your discovery? What did all of your studies tell you after extensive, extensive studies? Now it's like, this study says this. This says this.
Yep.
So,
and we want every bit of every information.
We want it right now. We want it all to say the same thing, and it doesn't. And I guess some of that is probably playing out with college football right now.
So, Joe, you got an article coming up on The Athletic about UT, which I think will open a lot of people's eyes about what UT football could look like in a different situation.
Yeah, well, listen, this is under the idea, first of all, that I still believe there's a really strong chance that there's no fall football. Right now, the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 are pressing forward. I'm not surprised. I think you're going to give this some time, and there's every reason to give it more time, although next week now we're talking about practices too. So hopefully if they do pull it, they have something more to tell the kids than the Big 10 and Pac-12 did, which they're saying, I don't know. Let's hope that the leadership in college football in these conferences does better there. I still think there's a strong chance that they don't have it. If they do have spring football, the column I wrote today at theathletic.com is, think about how good it could be for Tennessee. Now, this is a hypothetical football column, but if you think of who they're playing, if you think of who will be going to the draft and who they have, Tennessee's talent is in the young classes. Jarrett Garantano has to put has to put his game on film more. So they could be a lot more intact, I think, than a lot of SEC teams. Now, what we don't know, if this goes away and there's no fall football, I think we may be talking hundreds of early departures for the NFL versus around 100, which is what is a normal year. So that could still impact Tennessee and everybody a lot, but I think that they have a chance to have a stronger roster. So what if they have a 7-1 season and get into an expanded playoff in the spring? Would you take that, Tennessee fan, right now over happy to be 5-5 or 6-4 against this current schedule as it stands? Because, look, I'm sorry, Jeremy Pruitt has got things moving in the right direction. He has recruited well. He's got a lot of good young talent in the program. Their schedule, the new schedule, did them no favors, and if they did better than 6-4 against this current schedule, that would be a huge, to me, example of overachieving for Tennessee. You could have a totally different outlook, and maybe that then helps your recruiting, helps a lot of things. Just saying, there are some cases to be made for the spring. And then in general, anyone right now saying that spring football can't happen, I think they just really want fall football to happen, so they're going to say that, like Dabo Swinney. He's wrong. You don't know anything about that, and I think there's actually a pretty good chance that some things could be markedly better.
So the problem with telling people they cannot leave and declare for any type of draft in collegiate sports is the fact that it's just wrong and inherently un-American to tell somebody they can't go make a living. That was always the rub in terms of guys going from high school to pro sports. But what you can do, what is within your realm, in my belief, is what you can do is get out in front and be proactive about what might be a floodgate of transferring. You cannot have a free-for-all if you want to maintain any type of control of college football right now. You simply can't open a floodgate and have every top-notch player who wants to play this fall for an opportunity to maybe play pro or just simply to play in the first place. You got to get out in front of that, Joe, I think, and you got to get out front of it now.
Yeah, and I think, look, here's the thing. Like a Big Ten player could be like, well, I'm playing. I'm going somewhere where I can play. But how could you right now, if anyone is advising you, they would have to say, look, you could look at an SEC team or a Big 12 team and you could hope that they will play and that you could be eligible, but we might find out in 3 weeks that they're not playing. So you're going to transfer for
and you just made
no
a
reason?
Big mistake. Yeah, you yeah. just made a big mistake.
But I agree with you. I think that this is where the NCAA, which has just been sitting on the sidelines saying nothing, doing nothing, probably can step in and say, look, just so everyone knows, there are not going to be waivers granted on instant transfers just because to play this fall. So put that out of your mind. If you transfer, then you are transferring to play, I guess, in a potential spring season, or you're going to sit during this fall season if they have it. So just so you know. And then that at least stops that, because you're right. It's already going to be wild.
Can't be a free-for-all.
Yeah, and it's just – it's going to be – look, like if they do have a spring season, we know the Big Ten wants to. We know the Big Ten now is at least in on trying. You also have eligibility concerns. Ryan Day from Ohio State said he wants basically all players who participate in a 2021 season to have the same year of eligibility as they would have had in a 2020 season. And it sounds easy, but that's a lot of red tape to go through for the NCAA to figure it out. So – yeah, they would be wise to just squash this idea, because already the moving to the NFL is going to be massive, especially if these three leagues still left don't go. And by the way, the American Athletic Conference, still a league right now planning to play, part of Conference USA. There's other leagues, but the big three that we talk about a lot is, of course, SEC, ACC, Big 12.
And all those big conferences have put out in statements for the most part, and I want to say Big 12 in particular, the statement said it is our full intention on playing. They're leaving an opening right there, because it's not done and said yet. With people opting out, we saw the floodgates when the NBA opted out, when they postponed their season, when they quit, when they bagged it, everybody else followed suit, because it set the word that we use a lot right now is precedent. It set the precedent, and with all these other the independent schools, it started with the MAC, then you had UConn, then you had UMass, then all of a sudden these big Power Five conferences. It's hard to go forward when other people are not.
Yeah, look, I really thought before the Big Ten did this that we might be looking at a situation where the group of five, the smaller conferences, would try to make it go in the spring, and the Power Five would go in the fall, and it would be fine for the Power Five. But now we have it split up, and we're going to wait day after day to see if they're going to hold strong or if at some point they have a change of heart. The presidents are still going to decide.
Want to say a huge congratulations once again to Nashville SC for their first ever franchise victory against FC Dallas. They face the same team in action on 102.5 The Game. Coverage begins Sunday at 7:15, game at 7:30. For Marquise Munson and Joe Rexroad, I'm John Roberts here on The Morning Drive on 102.5 The Game. Guys, thank you very much.
Had a
great time.
You were
good
awesome.
Good chatting. Thank you. This was cool.
Thank you, man.
Had a good time, man.
Thank you for coming in
and,
early in the morning. I know it's early.
Peaches and herb. We'll always have peaches and herb.
And all the other little tidbits of information you got along the way of absolutely useless knowledge. So long, everybody. Have a great day and keep it right here on 102.5 The Game.